Troy Proud beat in front. They score! Brace a breakaway. Here's Paterka moving up. Durham backhander. He did it. He scored! He scored. I didn't know if it was in or not. He scored. Great backhand by Paterka. Throws it in front. Scarf way to go. They score!
Nice win for the Amerks last night at home against Charlotte. A little revenge, if you will, for the earlier road trip gone awry for this group. They had multi-point performances from Brandon Biro, who continues his strong play. Paterka, Murray, Ruotsalainen, all in front of a strong outing from Aaron Dell in his return. Dell is 6-0 as an Amerk this year. Huzzah, Marty Baron.
Huzzah!
How are you?
People are going to say, like, what the heck is huzzah? Well, you know, what do you do in Vegas when your flights get canceled and you have to stay an extra day? So you go to an AHL hockey game, right, Duffer? You go to the Henderson Silver Knights and you take in what is, the West Coast of AHL hockey. And they've got this game presentation that resembles a little bit of the Vegas Golden Knights. Obviously, they're the farm team, and they're literally 2 miles down the road. Mm-hmm. Mixed in with a trip to medieval times or White Castle or whatever you would want to call it. And then you end up having the town, what do you call it, carrier or adjuster or whatnot?
Town crier.
And he has the fans yelling, huzzah, after goals. So huzzah to you, Duffer. Here we go.
And the end of the game was great when they won. And I'm hearing this song. And unlike everything else in Vegas, it was not like at 12 on the volume specter. It was low enough that it was catching my attention. But then I was like, oh, wait a minute. And I realized that it was I guess it was from 2013. It was a Killers song called Shot at the Night, which of course makes sense. They're the Knights. And of course the Killers are from Vegas. So it all ties in perfectly, but I'm like, oh my gosh, I haven't heard this song in forever. And it was just kind of a fitting way for them to roll off the ice. However, the big story last night, without question, Paul Cotter, unbelievable. 2018.
Great number. The number 43.
Oh,
the Henderson Silver Knights.
Oh my gosh. How is it possible this dude wore 43? Anyway, research shows, Marty, that Paul Cotter, a 2018 draft pick of the Vegas Golden Knights, was an 8-game teammate of Matthias Samuelsson at Western Michigan University before something happened and he ended up playing in the OHL for a season. But anyway, he was the star of the show last night. Reckless abandon, to say the least. Scored a hat trick. Was really ticked off a few times after blocking a shot. Started a brawl. He was everywhere. It was great.
No, we had a lot of fun. It was one of those where I really came in without much expectation. I haven't been to many AHL games in the last few years. Obviously, our schedule in Buffalo and with the kids and what they've got going on. So I know you go to Rochester more often. So I thought, why not? And the game was great. There was some really, really big hits in the game early, and then it got sloppy. And, you know, and you mentioned that it's like the NHL. Sometimes you have the Eastern Conference play a certain style and the Western Conference plays a different style. You felt that this was a much more physical style of game than what we see in Rochester. Now, I believe that Rochester is a much better team, has much better talent than what we saw on the ice yesterday. Guys that are going to make it to the NHL and make it to the NHL soon. So maybe that's the reason why. And you saw it again last night, the Amerks winning 5-1 and their big guys and their skilled guys really leading the way.
Yeah, and Krebs and Samuelsson were reassigned for this break, and they didn't play yesterday with the Amerks, nor did they need to, having performed one night earlier out here in Vegas with the Sabres. But we'll see if they get into the lineup with Rochester moving forward before Buffalo returns to action a week from today at home against Columbus. Marty, it's all-star break in the NHL. We've got Darren Dreger coming up a little earlier than usual on the show today. We'll wrap things up with Ian McKay from the Buffalo Bandits as they're home to Rochester on Saturday for Hometown Heroes Night. And last night was interesting in the NHL, as it always is. Edmonton blew a 3-0 lead against the Washington Capitals, but prevailed 5-3. one of the funnier moments for me was a wide open Cody Ceci gunning for an empty net goal and Ryan Nugent Hopkins opting not to pass to him, which was pretty great. The LA Kings completed their best road trip apparently in franchise history, taking 10 of a possible 12 points, and they are right there knocking on the door for top spot in the division. And Calgary has won 5 of 6 and 6 of 8 after that really, well, I mean, somewhat COVID-induced awful slump that they went through, but you know, there they are again, right in the thick of things.
I can't believe you're not talking about one of your favorite teams in the National Hockey League, the Minnesota Wild, who went into Chicago and won 5-0.
The only notes on this page are all about the Wild. We were going to get there, big guy.
I know we're going to get there, but obviously Fiala is a great story. Kaprizov, Matt Boldy with, his start to his NHL career. So that's a story. And unfortunately, I mean, this was not the only blow to the Chicago Blackhawks yesterday. There was a massive, massive story because of Rocky Wirtz, the owner of the Blackhawks, really. And I'm seeing this. And if you haven't seen the story yet, he was asked by reporter in the Chicago Blackhawks town hall about what the team in Chicago is doing to move forward after what happened to Cal Beach in 2010 and what is in place with the organization. And Rocky Wirtz went off and really blew a gasket and says, we're not talking about Cal Beach. We're not talking about 2010. And you don't need any answer. You don't work for the team. And it was embarrassing. And, it was a really, really bad look for Rocky Wirtz and the Chicago Blackhawks that have already been, you know, put through the ringer, rightfully so, with the handling of sexual assault and sexual misconduct by one of their employee on Cal Beach. Now they are losing it on reporters and for the same, it was embarrassing. So that was a really, really tough moment yesterday for the Blackhawks.
And unsurprisingly, after Wirtz, through the team's PR group, issued an apology, that fell entirely, as you would expect, into the area of disbelief and insincerity from those reacting to it on social media and outwardly, because it was just, there was nothing that was going to fix the damage that was done last night. And
I felt bad for, honestly,
Kyle Beach is the one that we have to keep in mind the most at moments like last night, because it should never have unfolded that way. I would also say that I did feel a great sense of discomfort and for the employees of the Blackhawks who were stationed next to the owner on stage in front of that town hall gathering. It was beyond, we talk often and we should, and we need to keep doing this. You need to get uncomfortable in your conversations. This is not the kind of uncomfortable that anybody employed by the Hawks needed to feel last night in front of what is left their fan base at this particular moment. You know what I mean?
You have to, and I know sometimes, so Mark Lazarus is a really, really good writer and he covers the Chicago Blackhawks, obviously. And maybe, and I'm just saying, it happens where you have a strained relationship between a person and a reporter. Mm-hmm. But you have to be professional about it. We talked about Leon Draisaitl the other day. Like, Leon Draisaitl shouldn't have been so pissy with the reporter, but the reporter, I think, took it to another level, and it led. But Mark Lazarus did not take it to another level yesterday, was very professional, asked his question, did not get emotional. And then after he got berated by Rocky Wirtz, there was another reporter that stood up and wanted to ask a question. And he got met with the same resistance by Rocky Wirtz. And then he went in a different direction. He said, okay. He said, I talked to a lot of season ticket holder in Chicago, and with dropping attendance, and the resale market, they feel that they're losing value on their season ticket holder. And Rocky was, oh, so now you work for the team. Now you work in season ticket holder. Now you're, and just absolutely went crazy on this guy as well. So, and at the end of it, the reporter goes, this is a fair question. What if fans can do to retain value in their season tickets? And he goes, yeah, it's a fair question. Jennifer, you can answer that. Basically like throwing his employee, a ticket office employee or director or vice president or whatnot, in basically right under the bus. Like after he was being a complete, I'll say a complete jerk. Like he basically was like, yeah, you go ahead. You answer that. Like it was just awful, awful. Awful leadership by the Blackhawks.
Yeah, you mentioned Mark Lazarus, and obviously, I think we all saw the great work done by Rick Westhead.
Yes.
To bring this story to light. It's it's hard to even utter that sentence because you're feeling for Kyle Beach, and if you don't, then I just can't relate to, you know, your lack of empathy, I guess. But Rick, like Mark was doing a terrific job as well. And I think that's what we've seen through this. Like when you have investigative reporters and the whole nature of journalism, you know, began with breaking stories and getting the scoop and headline material and stuff like that. But I would say that as we've evolved, and boy, is it a slow process. I think there's been, especially with social media, a greater respect shown by those who are investigating something to those who are investigating the same thing. It's not, I'm going to get this story right and I'm going to get it before you and I'm going to get all the attention and I'm going to win the awards for my writing. It has not been that at all. So Mark, very involved, and as were others, but And honestly, I think it's really helpful in this process because no one is letting up. Everyone is trying to get through this and make sure that those who were abused have a wrong righted. And so Rick Westhead has been consistent on social media, and we're just, you know, getting word from, you know, in the last 15 minutes. Rick tweeted John Doe 3 among three potential plaintiffs, pardon me, weighing lawsuits against the Blackhawks. The former student, now in his 30s and working in the hockey industry, said Brad Aldrich confided in him that he was gay and told him Chicago had helped Aldrich secure a job at Miami of Ohio University. So you see,
like, I was reading the article, Duffer, and even more than that is that they were saying that Aldrich lured John Doe 3 with his Stanley Cup ring, his silver medal, all this memorabilia, told him that, look, he stepped away from the Blackhawks because he had won the cup and he had achieved everything he wanted in pros. So the Blackhawks helped him secure the job with Miami, Ohio, because that they had the connections there. Like, it's a very, very, very troubling story that is still in the news. Why? Because nobody should be put through what Kyle Beach, what John Doe 3 was put through. And hopefully nobody ever does. And that the more you shed light on it and how it happened, the more you can be careful and prepared, and more the organizations are going to be helping and supporting the victims if there was ever more that needed help.
And Marty, you were in such disbelief last night as we sat there watching that game, and you, without hesitation, were able to craft what the proper answer, what a proper answer could have been from Mr. Wirtz at the time when he was questioned. It's just,
what are you doing to help so move forward so that this never happens again? You know what, Mark? There's a lot of internal things and there's a lot of details we probably can't go into because, you know, it would take forever. But I can tell you this, that we have people in place, that we have drafted internal policies that players can feel, and not just players, employees can feel safe in reporting those type of incidents. We want to move forward learning from our mistakes and what has happened before. Like, there were so many ways to go about it. You brought up Wayne Gretzky. Wayne Gretzky on TNT last night said, if I had an 18-year-old son, or, well, he talked about a son because drafted by the Chicago Blackhawks, let's see, but even a intern, like an 18 or 19-year-old daughter that was employed by the Chicago Blackhawks, I would want to know that they are being protected. And what Rocky Woods did last night did not show that, basically showed that we don't care. We did not learn our lessons. We're going to fight with all our mighty power against people that want answers. And that was just about as stupid as it comes.
Yeah. It is. It's just hard to believe that the timing. I mean, the league's here in Vegas to celebrate, right?
Yeah.
Excuse me. And what are they going to get besieged with? You know,
well, Gary Bettman's going to get in front of the mic and he's going to be asked about, have you had a conversation with Rocky Wirtz? What are disciplinary action that the league is going to take against the Chicago Blackhawks? He was fined, you know, and people are smart, right? So he was fined $2 million for what happened. People are like, yeah, I guess that $2 million really, really hurt Rocky Wirtz. And he's really remorseful or whatnot. We don't know if, you know, personally what he's feeling. But again, you would think somebody would learn from that. You know, Rocky Wirtz is like, we're not talking about 2010. We're not going back there. Well, the GM search in Chicago is going on. We saw another tweet. They're like, yeah, they're not talking about 2010. But they hired Patrick Sharp and Marian Hossa to help with the GM search. Well, those two were on the team at the time, right? So it's a weird, weird, weird setup.
TSN hockey insider Darren Dreger when we come back on The Instigators right after this.
We're back with more of The Instigators presented by Seneca Resorts and Casinos. Nothing else comes close.
A little ball of hate. No, not hockey insider Darren Dreger from TSN, but the man who has been hired by Anaheim to be their general manager. He is unique by NHL statistical standards based on goals scored and penalty minutes in his career, and he has been working towards this job for a while. Dregs, welcome to the show. Big day for Pat Verbeek by the sounds of it.
Yeah, and long in coming too for Pat Verbeek. You know, he's interviewed for positions like this in the past, and for whatever reason, he just hasn't been given that opportunity, but it's definitely well earned. You know, Pat Verbeek is noted as being an excellent eye for talent. So the scouting aspect is going to be big for the Anaheim Ducks moving forward. I'm going to be intrigued as to how he builds out his department as a relatively inexperienced manager. Again, as a wealth of experience working in Tampa Bay and working for Yzerman in Detroit. So, you know, there's some out there who are intrigued by the hire. Not surprised. I mean, Pat Verbeek is very deserving. But if you spend any time around Pat Verbeek, the nickname Little Ball of Hate is well-earned. It certainly was as a player. Very quiet individual, very intense individual, and he can get a little prickly as well. So that's why I say there are some who are intrigued how the department is going to build out and how he's going to be able to manage people. But look, from a just a hockey perspective, I think this is a good hire. And as has been reported, and you know, we caught wind of this earlier this week, Jason Botterill was in the mix pretty heavy as well, right? And it really came down to those two outsiders. You know, if you want to give honorable mention to Madden and Nonis and Solomon, who were the internal candidates, it was down to a final two. And Jason Botterill was in that mix.
Now, I know that the Anaheim Ducks did not give Martin Madden permission to speak with the Montreal Canadiens for the job. So was that like a surprise that they did not go with Madden? Like they basically said, no, you're not talking to Montreal. We have our internal search here. But in the end, he doesn't even get the job in Anaheim. Could there be some, I don't want to call it repercussion, but like, they basically held him back without giving him the job.
Yeah. I mean, you know, did he get a pay bump? We don't know. Okay, I mean, you know, the inner workings, maybe he gets more responsibility as an AGM, but you know, is that part of the package with Pat Verbeek too, right? You know, you're coming in, you're the general manager, but guess what? You know, Martin Madden isn't going anywhere. You know, he's going to be involved. I don't know. I was surprised when that word broke that Anaheim protected Madden and didn't want him to talk to the group in Montreal, because you're right, Marty. It just then at that point became evident that he had to have been in the mix for the general manager job of the Ducks. He doesn't get it. So is there some bad blood? I guess we're going to find out based on what the future looks like for Madden in Anaheim. But, you know, again, yeah, a guy who's been in that talk, in the mix for other jobs in the past, most recent being Montreal and now Anaheim. But you poke around Martin Madden, and I feel bad for guys like this, because sometimes you get pigeonholed, don't you? As a player, as a coach, as a manager, where, well, here's his strengths, but we're more worried about what his weaknesses are. Well, how do you know a guy can be a general manager until he's been a general manager? And if your background is scouting, and Jeff Gorton comes to mind, you know, highly regarded as a scout and again, an eye on talent, then isn't that just a big part of what you need to do to properly build an organization? So I think that they would have had many internal conversations, but, and this is important, Paul Kariya and Scott Niedermayer were heavily involved in this process. You know, it's not just the eye candy of the former star player. Oh no, you know, let's just run some names by these guys. No, they did their due diligence and they vetted each individual candidate and then ultimately gave their recommendation to the Samuelis, the owners of the Anaheim Ducks.
Who do you think's further along among the California teams? I think San Jose seems to be a little bit behind, but LA is really hot and the Ducks have exceeded expectations. And how exciting is this for just kind of the renewal of the freeway faceoff, everything that is, you know, that is hockey in California?
Yeah. You know, when you've got Canadian teams that do well, we in Canada in the media always say, oh, the playoffs are better when there's a Canadian team involved. And I guess you can build that case from an eyeball perspective, ratings and all of that. I feel the same way about those three California teams. It just, it extends the interest across North America. And, you know, I've said this so many times before, I cheer for good people. And I think Rob Blake has done a real nice job as general manager in LA. He's made some bold decisions. Everybody makes mistakes. You know, he's dealing with what he's got, which is primarily an older roster, but they've got a nice complement of younger players. And I think Blake is, he's going to add a significant piece or maybe pieces between now and the deadline. And if you look at Anaheim, I think Anaheim's overachieved. I think that that's pretty obvious. John Gibson, I don't know, like Marty, correct me if I'm wrong. We talk about all these Vezina Trophy candidates, and without the play of John Gibson this year, the Anaheim Ducks, you know, with all the star status they've got developing and whatnot, they're not in the hunt. They're not in the mix in a playoff spot, I don't think. I think Anaheim's maybe 2 years away from being maybe a top team in the West. You know, they're trending that way. They've got a lot of work to do, and that's going to be the challenge for Verbeek. And, you know, is Dallas Eakin's going to get extended? There's still lots of question marks in Anaheim, and I'm not sure. I always, when I look at the San Jose Sharks, and I've looked at this team the same way for a decade or more, I keep waiting for the wheels to come off and them to just disintegrate, and yet they never do. And, you know, I guess that's a credit to Doug Wilson, who's, you know, not, he's with the San Jose Sharks, but he's not actively working with the San Jose Sharks, a credit to the work that he's done. But three really good teams that look to be trending in the right direction.
Well, Dregs, I will not correct you. John Gibson is a big reason why the Anaheim Ducks are where they are. When you look at goals save above expectation, he's seventh in the NHL, just behind Shesterkin, Saros, Anderson, Vasilevsky, Jari. So he's in that conversation. Pretty I'm not a big John Gibson fan, but you got to give him props for what he's doing in Anaheim right now. I guess I wanted to go now. I totally forgot. Oh, Ovechkin missing the All-Star break. Yeah. Is the league, I don't want to say like gonna want to know what happened there, because Ovechkin has said before he doesn't like the All-Star game. He's missed it and taken the suspension before or after. Yeah. Right. And now he gets a positive COVID test, misses a game and misses the All-Star game. Like, Are we thinking there's a little conspiracy going on over here?
What are you saying? He cooked a COVID test? So that
I said he used a Sharpie and put a line on the test.
Well, this might be the only way that you can legally get out of it. And I don't know, has the league come out to say that he's going to have to miss a game one way or another?
Well, he missed a game yesterday, right? So he's already missed a game before.
Yeah, but
so
that's because he's in COVID protocol. That's not because he's being disciplined for not going to the All-Star. I mean, this is a slippery one, and I don't know why the NHL would bother. And look, if Ovi and the Washington Capitals found a way to cook this up so that, you know, he could skip the weekend, man, that's new level of deviance in my world. Now, what's going to be more interesting is, okay, let's track Ovi for the next 4 or 5 days. What's he doing, right? You know, if we see him piling onto a private jet heading to warmer climates because he wants to isolate in Jamaica or Mexico or whatever, you know, then the league might have an issue. But it's a tough one, though, right? Because, you know, Ovi is, the All-Star hasn't been his favorite thing. Mm-hmm. You could say the same as Sidney Crosby and the times that he's missed and some of the other game stars. However, they've put in their time and they've done their bit. And when Ovechkin is there, he is committed. He's a fan favorite and he makes it an entertaining weekend. So I don't think that there'll be much to come out of this other than when he clears protocol and gets back into the Capitals lineup.
Pretty simple explanation for his absence. He and Backstrom are a duo. Mm-hmm. And without Nick being there, there was really no reason for Alex to be there either. When you look at the Florida Panthers, and we dove deep into them yesterday, Dregs, an interesting question came to mind for me under the guidance of Bill Zito and with some recent hirings around the league. Florida, to me, may have the best, like the longest list of best value contracts in the NHL right now.
Yeah.
And I was really curious from your standpoint, your knowledge of Bill and how he works and whether it is critical moving forward for most teams in the NHL to employ as a general manager or as a high ranking associate or assistant general manager, someone who was an agent who truly understands the back and forth, can make their client or former client feel valued in the team concept, but not have to max them out dollar-wise. And I know Florida's got tax advantages. I get that. But boy, oh boy, Zito has hit some home runs here in Florida.
They have, collectively speaking. We had him on the podcast this week on the Rain Driggs podcast. And, you know, he doesn't want to take credit for how well this team is playing, even though as general manager, he certainly deserves a lot of that. What he wants to do is share the credit. Talk about the great analytics department that they have in Florida that is like together with hockey operations. And as we know, as has been hotly debated over time on social media, you know, you don't always have that connection between hockey operations, the old school guys and the analytics guys. Mm-hmm. But they've got that nailed down and there's a real deep appreciation for how that works and how that can make the club better. But you're bang on with Billy Zito. And you look at Ken Hughes in Montreal. There are lots of agents that I would consider qualified to be general managers that are still high profile player agents. But think of the work that they do 24/7. And that is dealing with their clients, right? If there's an injury, if there's a contract issue, if there's a family problem, and it happens to be 3 o'clock in the morning and that player needs to be communicated with, guess what? The agent is going to do that. And I feel like Bill and Ken Hughes have adopted that approach. And you know, there's reason to believe in why that would work. And it also, to me, helps explain, and he was excellent. He talked about the relationships that he has around hockey and outside of hockey. Brian Flores came up in the conversation because he has a relationship with Brian, and Brian has taught him a lot on how to structure management, how to deal with players directly. Just a really interesting conversation there. But look at how you know, the controversy happens with Joel Quenneville and everything that went on in Chicago. They have no choice but to make a change in Florida. Andrew Burnett steps onto that bench. They haven't skipped a beat, not even a little bit. If you didn't know better, you would think that Scotty Bowman took over, you know, for Joel Quenneville. Well, okay, let's give credit to Andrew Burnett. Let's give credit to Bill Zito, because even though he's forced into making that call, he had to know that Bruno was at least ready for an interim position. Mm-hmm. And then the players said, this isn't coming off the rails. So the buy-in that they have throughout that organization from an ownership perspective down through management, their hockey operations, and their players is a big part of why the Florida Panthers are what they are today.
Well, we talk about Bill Zito and the different types of general managers around the National Hockey League. The Vancouver Canucks hire Emily Castonguay, an agent, as assistant general manager before hiring Patrick Alvin. And Chicago now has a vacant spot as GM. There's some rumbling out there. You guys had it on Insider Tradings about how it could be, you know, somebody that's very analytics driven in Chicago. Yeah. Now they got their own pile of crap that they're stepping in right now with Rocky Wirtz and what's going on over there.
Bizarre.
And we talked already about that. Yeah. So is Chicago one of those situations now where like an experienced general manager may say, I'm not going to go there because I mean, I'm stepping in again, a big pile of poop, yeah. And I don't want to do it.
I guess it depends on who we're talking about here and just how eager that guy is, that person is, to get back into that job. What is that job? You know, as I reported on Tuesday, they've got Jamie Faulkner, who is the CEO of business. She's involved. We know that Patrick Sharp, Marion Hossa, Eddie O are involved in an advisory capacity. Mm-hmm. You've got Danny Wirtz. Pretty obvious Rocky Wirtz is involved. And maybe he has the final sign off. And this process is just redundant because he's going to put whomever he wants in that chair as long as that individual is willing to take the job. But as we're going through all of that came out of that town hall meeting, the one comment that jumped out to me, and I think it was Danny Wirtz, where he said, this individual needs to have accountability, but also needs to have, you know, full authority and autonomy as head of hockey operations. Okay. All right. Well, are you giving that to somebody who has never worked inside hockey, who has worked inside hockey, hasn't been a general manager, so an entry-level general manager? Or are you going to that experienced general manager who's been there, done that before, who can take on multiple roles, call it whatever you will, president slash GM, whatever, head of hockey operations. And given what was experienced last night and yet another report today by Rick Westhead of more allegations coming from John Doe 3 involving Brad Aldrich in 2010, you've got all of that. And is this experienced individual likely going to take on what, look, let's call it what it is, a mess. It's a flat out mess. I mean, look, so I don't have an answer for you. It just seems convoluted to me that given everything that Chicago has been through, that they would even consider going outside the sport, go outside the sport, right? But then have a president, have a general manager, and have two or three AGMs, one of them who is entirely focused on analytics and has nothing to do with hockey. Bring them out of baseball, basketball, football, doesn't matter. It's a tough one. I'm struggling to wrap my brain around how they're going to make it work.
Dregs, last one for you. Minnesota has done so much right this year. There is no team among the top contenders this year that is going to enter into cap hell like Minnesota will in the next couple of years. So for many, and maybe it's wrong, but for many, they see this as the window right now. How does Minnesota become the early, most prominent player at the trade deadline to try to max out this season?
Yeah, they could. And I, knowing Billy Guerin the way I know him, he worked under Jim Rutherford in Pittsburgh for a good amount of time. I think he's going to try and get in early and just avoid the nonsense of the deadline. And part of that, too, is because of how well this team has played, right? Do you really want that distraction lingering around your room that date in March, March 21st? You're getting late into the season at that point. So, look, it's no secret that he's been looking for a center for quite some time, more of a depth center than anything else. And just because of the imbalance of the number of games played by so many different clubs, I think that's why we're a little bit stagnant right now, to be fair, in terms of trade dialogue. There's always lots of media speculation, but how much of it is actual real talk and negotiation between clubs? So he's going to try and add a center for sure. I wouldn't be surprised if he tries to bolster his blue line, but they're believing what they're seeing. This isn't a team that's just kind of coming into their own. Nah, they feel like the aggressive decisions they made coming into this season have paid off, and the work isn't done yet. So I look to Billy G to be a player in the trade market.
Is there one name that you would think that they're chasing?
No, it's too soon to say. I know, and it's been reported that, you know, there's been a fair amount of scouting back and forth between Ottawa and the Minnesota Wild. New York Rangers are paying close attention to Ottawa. So when I look at center, and maybe it's because, okay, now Josh Norris, we don't know, does he need surgery or doesn't he? Like, if he's out for an extended period of time, that's going to gum things up. You know, they've got Stützle playing center now. They've got Turney, maybe Colin White, you know, yeah. Depends, but yeah. You know, there might be a connection there.
Well, I'll leave you with this. Minnesota, among all their stunning statistics this year, they have 13 6-on-5 goals. 13 times they've had the extra attack they've scored. 20 teams in the NHL have two or fewer. And there's only there's only one team that's even remotely close to Minnesota in this regard. And it would surprise no one. It's Tampa. And they have 10. But the Wild are clutch. They're just so, so good. Dregs, thank you as always. Hey, and we'll talk to you again next week.
All right. Travel safe.
All right. Little Bandits talk with Ian McKay as we continue Instigators right after.
We're back with more of the Instigators, presented by Seneca Resorts and Casinos. Nothing else comes close.
Breaking news here on the Instigators. Our show has been postponed for tomorrow, Friday. There'll be no episode because Marty and I are going to be traveling, would put it mildly.
Hopefully.
Hopefully, and certainly unsure of just how long the destination will be. But hey, it's all about the journey, right? And when you get to 5-0 to start a season, it's not always easy or perfect. And I would say the Bandits are living proof of that, coming off an 18-17 overtime win over New York on Sunday. Bandit transition player Ian McKay is with us. He led the club with 12 loose balls on Sunday as part of that come from behind victory. Ian, have you settled in and exhaled after that dramatic affair against the Riptide on Sunday?
Yeah, barely. I was talking to our captain, Steve Priolo, this morning over text, and we were both saying, like, this week just feels so off because the game is on Sunday, obviously, and we're used to Saturday games, so feels like a Wednesday to us, and it's a short week, but definitely can take a deep breath after that one now.
Ian, I love the game of lacrosse. I don't know all the intricacy of the game. Duffer mentions the 12 loose balls. I find it that it's almost the most dangerous playing lacrosse when there's a ball that's there and you guys all converge to it and it's like a mess, right? So are you guys, do you ever feel like, oh my goodness, I'm going to run into the wall here and something bad's going to happen when there's a loose ball around? What's the process to that?
I mean, in the heat of the moment, I think you just kind of black out and want to get the ball and get out of there. But there's the funny famous saying in lacrosse is don't have alligator arms. You don't want to go in there short arming it, making sure you don't get slashed. So obviously it's do whatever you take to get the ball and get possessions. And, you know, a lot of those I found myself on the faceoff teams and, you know, Chase Fraser, Nick Weiss, you know, we have a handful of guys that take faceoffs that, you know, popped the ball kind of right to my area and made it pretty easy. So I guess right place at the right time, but definitely try not to have alligator arms in those situations. So
the Bandits win 18-17 on Sunday, one of the great scores in lacrosse. I mean, you have a high scoring game like that, people are thoroughly entertained. The Bandits led 14-10, trailed 17-14. Ian told us off air that was the first time in 5 games this year the Bandits have trailed in a game. How did you guys pull it out at the end to win it in overtime?
Honestly, I don't think we were really too phased at all at any point in the game, especially late in the fourth quarter. And there was one point, I won't mention the player on New York's team, but after they went up a couple goals, he was kind of dancing by our bench and smiling, chirping our bench. And Josh Byrne was telling me that all the offense looked at each other and was like, all right, let's turn it on. Like he just wrote the death wish right there. So I think that just goes to show, you know, we weren't really phased at all. And when you have a goalie like Matt Vince in that and the offense that we do that can obviously score at will, putting up 18 goals in a game. I don't think we're too phased. And I think if anything, the defense was just trying to hold on for dear life and limit their opportunities as much as possible.
So, you know, Duffer, I mean, sporting a Bandits hat this morning, and he's been wearing it all through Vegas representing Bandit Lands. When he came to our Sabres game the next day, he's like, oh, should have seen the refereeing last night. It was brutal. They missed so many calls. Like, so, I mean, do you guys have that, I don't want to say relationship with referees, but you probably see the same refs all the time. Is there a time where you're like, dude, like, get your whistle and let's go? Because it looked to me like it was really tough sledding for the refs in that game.
Yeah, I mean, there's obviously only a select few that ref the league, and you see a lot of the same guys most games, and you build relationships because they ref you in junior as well and summer ball. You know, so you see them a lot, and sometimes they can be your friend and sometimes you don't want anything to do with them. But I mean, a good example of that was actually in game. We had, I was pushing transition and we had a quick sub and DeHoga and Nanakope was coming off the bench and they called us for too many men. And later in the game, we ended up getting a penalty because of it. And later in the game, we're coming from a media timeout and the ref was talking to me and he's like, so what do you think? Like, do you think it was too many? Was it close? I was like, well, you know my answer. Obviously, it wasn't too many men, but it's cool. You have those conversations and you get to know the refs. And, you know, sometimes you wish that they might put the whistles away, especially in a game like that where down the stretch there was a lot of penalties called. And, you know, you just kind of want the teams to battle it out and obviously see who comes up on top. And you don't want refereeing to get involved. But, I mean, it's all part of the game. And you see it in every sport, obviously, too. So.
Ian, last one. I know this weekend special in Banditland, it's Hometown Heroes Night. Not too long ago, we had Tucker Out Lymphoma Night. You had special gloves for that occasion. I just a quick story, if you could, as to how those gloves came about, how the auction went for them, and how excited you were to score that night wearing those gloves.
Yeah, you know, each year, obviously, we do the Tucker Out Lymphoma Night, and it's a really special night, not only in Buffalo, but throughout the league. And there's actually a girl on Instagram or Twitter. Her name on Twitter is Kicks by Carly, and she does a lot of painting of the gloves and cleats and stuff throughout the PLL and NLL. So I kind of reached out to her last minute and got a pair of all white gloves sent to her, and I just kind of gave her free rein, sent her a picture of the jerseys so she had kind of the colorway of what was going on, and she obviously crushed it with those and did a really good job. And I think I ended up getting $250, $270 towards the fundraiser for that. So that was really cool. And just to, you know, be able to do something like that and honor Tucker and the Williams family is always an awesome experience.
Well done. They really stood out. And honestly, it was, that was one of the best games of the season as well. It was absolutely perfect night against Toronto. Good luck this weekend. Look forward to chatting again down the road, Ian.
Awesome. Thanks for having me, guys. Appreciate it.
All right. There's Ian McKay of a 5-0 Buffalo Bandits. This is a team that is home to Rochester on Saturday night. Marty, travel-wise permitting, we are hopeful that we're going to be back in time to take in this game at KeyBank Center for a 7:30 start. What's on your mind, Marty, as we close it out here for the week? Again, we are preempted tomorrow due to travel concerns and delays on our end as far as the Instigators are concerned. What are you thinking as we head into All-Star Weekend?
I'm going to go spy on what's happening at the Bellagio's tonight with the fountains and what they're shooting up ahead to the skills competition tomorrow. And just the All-Star Weekend, kind of see how they do it there in Vegas and what that looks like.
All right. And don't forget the Instigators Overtime podcast is going to be coming your way soon with a little all-star flair to it as well. And if you've missed any of those episodes, they are all available on Sabres.com and our YouTube channel. One Bills Live coming up next. See you soon, folks.